right. Well, we come now to probably one of the most colorful individuals in the Bible. And you know who that is, of course, Samson. And he's a real puzzle as you think about him. He is hard to figure out. He has, of course, the Spirit. God is with him. God raised him up. And at the same time, he turns out to be a man who is promiscuous. He's violent, arrogant, and all of the above. And so yet he makes it into Hebrews chapter 11. And one of the things as I think about that, and I think studying some of these judges sort of opened my eyes with regard to this. It caused me to think about something I've never really thought about before. But when you think about those people who made it to Hebrews chapter 11, now, most of them were not only men and women of great faith, but they were good and you know, godly and righteous. Abraham and the others that are listed there, Noah. But not all of them, but some of them are, they all have faith. That's why they're in, you know, we call it the Hall of Fame of the faithful. But everyone who has great faith, they don't always live by that faith. And we've seen that in the Judges. Again, the book of Judges is one of the darkest books probably in all of the Bible, probably the darkest book. It just, you know, it's the people of God being bad all the time, just about. And the judges themselves, you know, I stop and think about the ones we covered. Probably Deborah was the greatest of the judges, really, so far as character is concerned. Like, you know, she was a woman of great integrity, great faith, and just a great example for all of us. But it kind of goes downhill from her. Like Gideon, and you know, it's just on different levels. Gideon was a good, he taught us a lot of things, but his life didn't end all that well. Jephthah, you know, he just had that rough background and had really that a heathen background, pagan background. And so he was a man of great faith too, but you know, different takes on him but it just depends on, as we covered it, depends on what position you take with regard to that, to his daughter. If he actually offered her up as a human sacrifice, then wow, that's bad. And that's hard to believe. But, you know, regardless, he had his faults. And then we come to Samson, and he's worse than all of them. Like, he just is something else, really, so far as his character is concerned. It is not very worthy at all, and yet God raised him up. But we come to a time now where really Israel is just in a mess from a spiritual standpoint. In fact, you look at verse 1, chapter 13 is where his story begins. And at verse 1 it says, "And the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord." So the Lord gave them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. And so again, they do evil. Like, this is what they keep doing over and over again. And this is the seventh cycle of evil that we see. The seventh time in the book of Judges that we see the people of God just doing evil, and they cry out, and then God in his grace and mercy delivers them, and then they do evil, and that cycle continues, and they just do evil, 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 over and over again. And again, this is the seventh time, and this time they've been oppressed for 40 years. That's like twice as long as any other time. Remember, the longest before they were oppressed was 20 years. So they're just in a mess now. They've been oppressed for 40 years. And Samson really is sort of an embodiment of this whole period, when you stop and think about it. The people of God, they were called out to be his special people. They were to be a light to the Gentiles. and God's special treasure above all of the peoples of the earth. But what did they do? From a spiritual standpoint, they lusted after other gods. They committed spiritual adultery over and over again and kept finding themselves under the captivity, the bondage, and the oppression of their enemies. And then you think about Samson. And what was his main problem? Women. Lust. People always say he was a he-man with a she problem. And that's right. And it was always worthless women who were ungodly that he was attracted to. But it was lust that got the best of him. And so what happened to him because of that? He ended up in the end under the bondage, under the captivity, under the slavery of his enemies. His life just is kind of a picture of this whole period of time. And one of the things, you know, if you want to see just how bad these people are now, what's very interesting here is that these people, even though they've been oppressed again for twice as long as ever before in this period, the period of the judges, they don't cry out to God. Did you notice that? It's the only time where the people don't cry out. They never cry out to God. It's almost as if they have accepted their fate. They're just used to this kind of living, and God, they don't even think about God coming and helping them. You know who it is that in times of need don't turn to God and ask for help? The godless. Those who have no relationship with God. Those who are far off from God, or God is far off from them in their minds. And that's these people. For the first time, they don't ask for deliverance. We'll get back to this in a moment, but it was God who initiated delivering them. Out of his great mercy, he's the one who did that. They didn't cry out. And that seems to speak volumes of where they are mentally and spiritually. In fact, if you really want to know this whole period, but particularly where they are right now, you turn over to the very last verse in the book of Judges, and we have it. In Judges chapter 21 at verse 25, it says, very last verse, the whole book closes with this, says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That's where they were. And by the way, that's where Samson was. As we go through his life, we'll see. That's exactly how he lived his life. He didn't care about what God wanted him to do. He was supposed to be a Nazarite. That's what God wanted him to be. And determined it before he was even born. He wasn't worried about that. The vows that he was supposed to keep, the regulations of that vow, he broke them all. He did what was right in his own eyes. And yet, you know, again, one of the things, and this is why I started to say a while ago, you think about faith. And again, you can have great faith, but that faith can wane sometimes, and you know, the Bible tells us that if you love God, you'll do what? You know, the Bible never says that about faith. Unless you can think of a passage, I can't think of a passage that says that about faith. And that's why I sort of have to reconsider Hebrews chapter 11. Most everyone there, they were all people of faith. That's what the chapter is about, of course. But it doesn't mean that they all lived great lives from the beginning to the end. And the fact that Samson made it in there speaks volumes. And he was a man of faith. He just didn't live by it very much at all. Maybe in moments. You know, the rest of them were a lot of the judges were strong. They were people of faith, but they had their moments of weakness and faith. Samson was the opposite. He had moments where you think, that was good. And the rest you're thinking, that was terrible. And so, you know, you got to think about that even with yourself. You know, maybe if there is any book in the Bible that cries out, we're not saved by faith alone, it would be some of these examples of the judges. Like he made it to Hebrews 11. But just believing that God is and that he exists is not going to get you to heaven. And that's not my take on Samson and where he is and where he'll end up. That's God's duty. But I just know studying his life, he was a wreck. Now, as we get into this, though, it's very interesting. It says again, the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord gave them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. Now, it says, then there was a certain man of Zorah of the tribe of the Danites whose name was Manoah. And his wife was barren and had no children. And the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, behold, you are barren and have not borne children. You know what she's thinking right there? Tell me something I don't know. But you're barren and you can't bear children. Behold, he goes on to say, but you shall conceive and bear a son. And so this is what I was talking about earlier. Here's God taking the initiative. And there's kind of a correlation here between them and us. Here they are. They're ungodly. They're serving other gods. They don't even ask for his help. Their faith in God seems to have disappeared almost altogether. I'm talking about the people as a whole, Israel. And in the midst of all of that ungodliness, he raises up a deliverer. That sound familiar? What did God do with Jesus? And what kind of world did Jesus come into? A bunch of people crying out for God for a Savior? No. A real corrupt. A world that was corrupt, full of sinners who weren't thinking at all, for the most part, most people, not thinking at all about serving God. It reminds us of Romans chapter 5. You remember how Paul put it with regard to this. And Romans, the 5th chapter, it says at verse 6, for while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. That's who he came for. That's what he found when he got here. In John chapter 1, you remember, it says that he came into the world, and the world what? Knew him not. What a shame. Why? Because the world was corrupt and full of sin. And yet it was at that very time, while we were still, while we were yet sinners, that he died for us. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would even dare to die. But God shows his love for us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Since therefore we have been justified by his blood, much more shall we be saved by him from the wrath of God. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his son, much more now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by his life. Enemies, he says, sinners, ungodly. Those are the terms that are used. And so in the midst, just like in the days of Samson, he raised up a deliverer, even though they didn't deserve it. Even though they didn't even necessarily want it, or at least they didn't ask for it. They've kind of, as you go through the next few chapters, you'll find that Israel right now is at a place where they're under the bondage of the Philistines, and they just kind of accept it. And it is the way, it's just the way life goes. By the way, who were the Philistines? As you think about the Philistines, you know, we know about the Philistines. We hear about them. We've all looked at the story of David and Goliath and all of that. But just quickly, the Philistines weren't Canaanites, technically. Now, sometimes the Bible uses the word Canaanite to describe all of the people, you know, in that whole region. And from that standpoint, they probably would be included in that. But technically, they weren't Canaanites. They weren't from that area. They were from the region of the Aegean Sea, Greece, in that area. So they weren't even Semitic. They were more Hellenic, and they'd have fair skin, and, you know, they were more, you know, just Greek-like in their stature and all of that. They didn't look like Canaanites. And what happened is about 1200 BC, they probably we're not told really, but they moved towards Egypt. They really attacked Egypt. But most think that they were probably invaders, probably came and forced them out of their hometown. But anyway, they went towards Egypt and decided to fight against them, but they lost. So they migrated then up the coast and settled there on the coast of the Mediterranean into five cities. And you might remember what those five cities are. One was Ascalon, which is still a city in Israel today. And Ashdod was another one. That's still a city. Gaza, or we sometimes say Gaza, but right there is, you know, that's still the Gaza Strip. We're all familiar with that. And Gath and Ekron. And they settled in those five cities. And that area, that was Philistia. And that's where they settled for many years, and they were on the scene then for a long time. Basically, all the way up to the time of David, till he conquered them pretty good and subdued them pretty good, and so then, you know, then they kind of disappear. You ever seen a Philistine? There are no Philistines. And so now later on in the history of all of that, later on after the fall of Israel, really about 135, the Roman emperor, he just to jab the Jews, named that area Palestine. And Palestine is Greek for Philistia. So he was just rubbing it in. Like land of the Philistines is what Palestine really meant. That wasn't a word back, you know. I mean, the Jews didn't use that. What do you think they call that area? They don't call it Palestine, you know, way back then. They called it Israel. And so now then you can get it all into the political aspect of it, and that stuff we're not going to get into tonight. That's just a big mess. But originally that, you know, that it was Philistia. The land of the Philistines, they had control of that, and they bothered the people of Israel, you know, over and over again. And right now then, at this time, they're oppressing them until God, by his grace and mercy, raises up a deliverer, Samson. But he only begins to deliver them. Doesn't complete it. He only begins to deliver them. And so that's what we see. But again, God, we should think about that with our own deliverance. It's all God's mercy. We didn't deserve it. Most weren't crying out for it. He simply, at the fullness of time, sent his son as a redeemer. And we're the benefactors of that. So we ought to appreciate that. Well, getting back to Judges though, it says, so an interesting thing in all of this. Now we'll get into Samson in chapters 14, 15, and 16. And, you know, it's all about him. But what's very interesting is chapter 13 is not about him at all. It's about his parents. And that is pretty interesting. Like, you could skip chapter 13. After the first few verses there, like at verse 8 or so, and just go right on into chapter 14. And so far as Samson, in the life of Samson is concerned, you wouldn't miss a beat. When you think at the very end of the chapter at verse 24, it says, and the woman bore a son and called his name Samson. Then you have verse 25 in the next verse, Samson went down to Timnah. By that time, he was at the marrying age. So it skips all of that. In chapter 13, then, it's all about the parents. That's very interesting. Why did the Holy Spirit give us all this information? Just talk about his parents in the rest of this chapter. And of course, we don't know. We're not told. But I have an idea. At least something we can learn from it. These two individuals, Manoah and his wife, who is never called by name. And just for the record, these are two godly people. And she even has a little more insight, at least, into things than he does. But we don't even know who she is, what her name is. But these two are very godly people with great faith. And that's amazing when you stop and think about, as I have described, this is a lowly time in Israel. This is the worst time of all this period of Judges when, again, the darkest book we have in the Bible, and they're just a mess going. They're at their worst right now, and still you have these two people who love God, have faith in God, and do everything they can to have a good, godly home. If I wanted to, I could make a sermon out of this on marriage. And we could talk about this couple in three ways. They were a couple of great faith. They were a couple who were willing to sacrifice. And they were a couple who were a partnership. And we could talk about those. I hate that I brought that up. I'll preach that sometime. But it's a wonderful, that's who they are in the midst of all of it. And what that tells us is, yeah, we're living in an ungodly world today. But it doesn't matter how ungodly this world gets. It doesn't matter what direction the government goes in. It doesn't matter if we're surrounded by sin and unrighteousness. There's no excuse for us not being godly people full of faith. And this couple says, you can do that. Because that's exactly what they were. And you just wish that Samson would have turned out better. Like, for all of you parents, this one thing that this teaches us, too, about parents, they did everything right, just about. Like, they probably made some mistakes. We don't have a lot of the history there, but they did everything they could. They were good and godly. But Samson was who he was. And with our children, that's the way it is. Like, we should do everything we can. We should be a praying people, praying parents, if you will. We should be godly. They should see a good example in us. But at the end of the day, they're going to do what they want to do because that's what human beings do. That's how God created us, as free moral agents. And everyone has to choose for themselves how they're going to live. And one of the things we find, not just in the Judges, but it's interesting, you study the kings. And at least, of course, all the kings of Israel were terrible. But in Judah, sometime in the southern kingdom, you'd have just a terrible king, and his son would do what was right in the eyes of God. And then you'd have some, the very opposite, where a king would be great and reform the kingdom and tear down the altars, or at least some of them, and then his son would go right back to the ways of the king before him and do evil in the eyes of God. And it cries out, everybody has to choose for themselves how they're going to live and who they're going to serve. And so that is just always the case. And with Manoah and his wife, they made the right choices. They were a good, godly couple. And even as you begin to read this, you see, at verse 3, and the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, behold, you are barren and have not borne children, but you shall conceive and bear a son. Therefore, be careful and drink no wine or strong drink, and eat nothing unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. Now, here's a woman who was barren and promised by an angel she was going to have a son. Has that ever happened before? Give me an example of when that has happened before. Well, Sarah, Jesus is the most obvious. But outside of Jesus, Sarah, we remember Sarah. And you remember how that happened. How the angel, again, an angel of the Lord was talking to Abraham. Two of them appeared to him, but they were telling him, you're going to have a son. In fact, you're going to be a father of many nations. All of that. And who was listening in the background? And what did she do when she heard that? She laughed. That was her response. She was barren. Her husband was old. And so she heard that and she just laughed. Of course, when the angel confronted her, no, I didn't laugh. He said, no, but you did. You can't fool God, can you? He knew she laughed. That was a little moment of some slippage in her faith there. As we studied when we were there, that was a lack of faith there. Doesn't mean she was faithless or she didn't recover. She was a great woman of faith, but right there it was an example of her not believing like she should. And then give me another example of that happening. John the Baptist. Right? This time the angel Gabriel appeared to Zechariah, remember, and told him about the situation. And you remember his response? He didn't, he doubted. And Gabriel got kind of mad, didn't he? Remember Gabriel telling him, I stand in the presence of God. It's almost as like he's saying, what do you think? I'm in God's presence. You think I came down here just to have fun? So I'm down here. I came here to give you a message, to give you good news. And then made it so he couldn't talk until those things happened. Because that was his response when he heard it. What was Manoah's wife's response? We're not told exactly, but it's clear she simply accepted it. She was a woman of faith. She didn't doubt it at all. She accepted it. And that's the first clue that, you know, these people and her and Manoah, they were in lockstep with each other. You could just tell that they were together. There was no jealousy among them or anything like that. There was no arrogance one toward the other, anything like that. They were a partnership. But when she's told this, she doesn't give any indication whatsoever that she doubted it at all. Instead, it says, goes on to say, and then the woman came, verse 6, came and told her husband, a man of God came to me, and his appearance was like the appearance of the angel of God. Very awesome. I did not ask him where he was from, and he did not tell me his name. But he said to me, behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, so drink no wine nor strong drink, and eat nothing unclean, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death. Which, you know, we think about, again, the idea of, we learned something about Samson. He was to be a Nazarite. And the Nazarite vow, most of you remember, when you took that, you couldn't, not only could you drink wine or strong drink, you couldn't even eat grapes. No grapes or dates. That was out of your diet too. And so you couldn't cut your hair, all of that. So it was a restrictive lifestyle in which one was dedicated to God, and it was voluntary. And it didn't have any tribal restrictions to it. Anybody could take, man or woman, rich or poor, slave or master, whoever, anybody who wanted to could take the Nazarite vow. And we're not told in the Old Testament how long it was, but in the tradition of the Jews in the Mishnah, we're told that it was 30 days. And then sometimes it would be doubled, and sometimes it would even be tripled and be between 90 and 100 days. But it was all voluntary. But it was serious business. Like you couldn't, if you violated the vow, even accidentally, then you would have to offer some sacrifices. Thank you. It's all told in the book of Numbers, but you had to offer a male lamb for just an offering, and then a ewe lamb for a sin offering, whatever, all of that. Then a ram. Just all kind of things and you had to start it over. You know, because that was serious. You took a Nazareth because it was voluntary. Remember what we saw with Jephthah? If you vow what? You better keep it. And when it came down to this, God never told anyone you had it, except for on three occasions. And again, there are three occasions where individuals were it was a lifetime vow. Samson is one of them. Can you think of the other two? John the Baptist was one, and Samuel was the other. And so those were the only cases where it wasn't voluntary. They were to be Nazarites for their whole life. But usually it was only like 30 days or so, unless they wanted to extend it. But you had to do it. And so that is what God determined that Samson was going to be. But what's interesting here is, as we go down further, it says, so she gets this information and she tells her husband about it. Tells Manoah about it. And then it says, Manoah prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord, please let the man of God whom you sent come again to us and teach us what we are to do with the child who will be born. Can you see faith in there? Very first thing he does is what? He prays. Let me tell you what the people of Israel in general weren't doing a whole lot of at this time. They weren't doing a whole lot of praying. They were living life without God. That's why they never called for help. But that doesn't mean everyone. These two rose above all of that. They were still very godly. It was by nature. The first thing Manoah did is he prayed. And he prayed with the intention of doing what God wanted him to do. And raising this child in a way that would be pleasing to the Lord. So again, their godliness is very, very impressive. And watch, it says, and God listened to the voice of Manoah. What does the Bible tell us? Even in the Old Testament several times, what does the Bible tell us about prayer? God doesn't what? He doesn't hear sinners' prayers. We have more statements in the Old Testament that says that than in the New. So you can understand this was a man of faith. This was a man who was godly when we find God listened to the voice of Manoah. And the angel of God came again to the woman as she sat in the field. Now that's kind of interesting. He's praying, this man to come back. And he does, but not to him. Goes back to the wife while she is in the field. But Manoah, her husband, was not with her. So the woman ran quickly and told her husband. Why? Because they're a team. They're a partnership. And she wants him to see this as much as, like, you know, she didn't say, hey, Manoah, angel of God appeared to me twice, you zero. It wasn't that at all. She gets up and she runs to her husband and tells him, hey, the man has come back. This one who is awesome, he comes back. And so it says, at verse 11, Manoah arose and went after his wife and came to the man and said to him, are you the man who spoke to this woman? And he said, I am. By the way, this angel of the Lord, very few words. Like, they have to prod him to get him to like one, two word sentences all the time. And so he just says, I am. And Manoah said, now, when your words come true, now notice that it's not if, but when. When your words come true, what is to be the child's manner of life? And what is his mission? Like, he wants to know. They are fully planning to cooperate and help. How do you want us to raise him? What is going to be his mission? It is not, you know, what kind of promises are you going to make to anything like that? It's all about pleasing God. Pleasing this being. Now, as we get down into this, we don't have time to look at it now. We probably won't look at it all anyway. But we have seen it in the book of Judges several times, this angel of the Lord appear. And I've talked to you before that, you know, a lot of people believe that this was Christ before his incarnation. And I've long since believed that. It's clear that the angel of the Lord, it's not just a angel, it's the angel of the Lord. And it's clear that he's divine. There's too many passages, and never is that clearer than in this chapter. We'll see when we get to it. But even in other places, he's divine, but he's different from the Father. Because the Father sends him. And so they're two separate beings, and yet he's clearly divine. And so there's only, you know, you don't have a whole lot of options when it comes down to divine beings, do you? How many choices do you have? That's it. So now, you know, I never get into that in great detail because you do what you want with that. And, you know, some don't agree with that. But I think the evidence is clear, particularly in this passage. And it's just a very interesting thought. Just to think about God's scheme of things and what deity does and all of that. You know, most would say this is what you would call a theophany. And so you could study that and come to a conclusion with that. But you see, Manoah, just like his wife, they're very godly. And she believes it right away, and so does he, and there's no doubt about it. And they just want to know when he arrives, how are we to treat him? What's going to be his mission? How should we raise him? And, you know, and so, you know, great lessons can be learned about the home just looking at this couple. And so there's not too much more in this chapter. We'll get to that, and then we'll start looking at the life of this interesting individual, Samson, next week.